live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We're going to begin with the latest on health and healing, nutrients that make a difference. Then we shift over to our environmental section, showing you what we can do in a positive way to limit the danger to our environment. Then commentaries, Chris Hedges, 2011, A Brave New Dystopia. Then Chav Valencia, The Hunger Game, all about hunger in America. And then my guest, Michael Rupert, talking about signs of peak oil, looking at the upcoming year, the oil shortages, further depression, and the end of the infinite growth paradigm. Time permitting, a commentary from Richard Clark on the psychological, cultural, and societal disintegration of America under post-industrial capitalism. Lots to talk about. Won't have time to take calls today. Let us begin. All the information I'm sharing is based upon empowering people. From the peer-reviewed journal Cell, How Exercise Grows a Healthy Heart. It says everyone knows that exercise comes with metabolic and cardiovascular benefits, but scientists understood little about how physical activity actually influenced the heart itself. Now a new study gives us that insight, the first molecular level insight. The studies suggest that exercise turns on a genetic program that leads the heart to grow as heart muscle cells divide. It appears that shift in activity is driven in part by a single transcription factor, that means a gene that controls other genes, and that gene was known to play important roles in other parts of the body, but this is the first evidence for its influence on the heart. Quote, we have identified a pathway involved in beneficial cardiac hypertrophy, the kind of good heart growth. This is from Harvard Medical School. In lay language, this simply means that for a long time we've known that when you bike, jog, run, swim, play tennis, jump rope, you're forcing the heart to pump harder in order to get more blood to the cells along with oxygen and the nutrients in those bloods so that the bloodstream so that the cell can have energy. The most energy in the body is used in the heart and the brain. Now, the heart and the brain only weigh more or less about 2.5 pounds each. So you're talking about 5 pounds, let's say in a 150-pound person, is a small percentage of overall body weight, and yet up to 20 to 25% of the total energy. Therefore, by taking in nutrients and then exercising, all of which increases the energy capacity of the cell, you're strengthening it. Hence, when you don't exercise, you're weakening your heart. You're also not getting sufficient oxygenation and blood supply to the brain. So you end up with brain fog, sitting at a desk, watching television, just not exercising, driving too much. Now, right now, we have a lot of taxi drivers in New York City who are listening to this program. And first, I want to thank them for listening and also for the fact that they have the program on, so sometimes other people in the car can hear the information and may glean something from it of value. We're just sharing the concepts they hear. But they also should understand that because their body is not in the right position and their legs are bent at the knees, that limits the amount of blood and oxygen and nutrients getting to the extremities, the feet and the ankles. And that's why they end up with little purpley veins in the feet and the ankles. You need to keep pressure upon the ball of the foot and go from ball of the foot to the heel. You need to flex your cheek muscles. You need to flex your leg muscles about every 5 minutes for about 60 seconds. That helps you if you're going to be in a sedentary position. Also, when you get out and you start to exercise and you're increasing your circulation to the brain and heart, that's all good. Now, follow that with good nutrients like vitamin E and your antioxidants, and you're doing a lot of good for your heart. The fact that they now actually understand what's happening in the heart is good, but hey, we didn't have to know the mechanisms to know that something was benefiting us. vitamin E, vitamin C, quercetin, coenzyme Q10, NADH. These are the nutrients, along with L-carnitine, that help the heart and help the brain. We recently had a food bill that I was opposed. Many of you were opposed. More than 6 million of us contacted our legislators saying we were against the bill, but we were in a weakened position because we weren't giving enormous campaign contributions to the legislators who voted for the bill, including all the Republicans. They got the money. They voted for big industry. Monsanto, DuPont, genetic engineering. But there was something else that happened with that bill. And Mike Adams broke this story, and I'll repeat it here. Quote, "Of all the talk about Senate Bill 510, virtually no one has actually read the language in the bill, especially not those lawmakers who voted for it. The more you read from this bill, the more surreal it all becomes. For example, did you know that a global FDA power grab agenda hidden in the Food Safety Modernization Act, Section 305, is entitled Building Capacity for Foreign Governments with Respect to Food Safety? And it gives the FDA authority to set up offices in foreign countries and then dictate the food safety plans of foreign governments. It says specifically on page 217 of the bill, foreign offices of the Food and Drug Administration, the Secretary shall establish offices of the Food and Drug Administration in foreign countries selected by the Secretary. Then goes on to say, the Secretary shall, not later than 2 years of the date of enactment of this Act, develop a comprehensive plan to expand the technical, scientific, and regulatory food safety capacity of foreign governments and their respective food industries from which foods are exported to the United States. Lay language. The FDA is now going to run the food safety program of all foreign governments. So, and then they bring in Homeland Security and the U.S. and Treasury. You heard me right. So who's involved in creating this? Believe it or not, the Global Food Safety Plan is developed under consultation with the Department of Homeland Security as well as the U.S. Treasury. The bill states, quote, consultation in developing the plan under a subsection A, the Secretary shall consult with the Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary of State, Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Homeland Security, the United States Trade Representative, and the Secretary of Commerce, representative of the food industry, appropriate foreign government officials, non-government organizations that represent the interests of consumers and other stakeholders, unquote. Well, you might reasonably wonder, what does this Department of Homeland Security have to do with the FDA's food safety plan? Or why is the U.S. Treasury involved in food supply? Well, learn more about the Federal Reserve and you'll have all the answers to these questions. Codex harmonization, that's what it's about. It means that now they can go to page 195 of the bill, and you'll see for yourself, the plan to develop under subsections shall include provisions for secure electronic sharing. This is so that the FDA can electronically track and monitor the food production activities of foreign nations. That way, if somebody in Spain tries to sell organic almonds to the USA, the FDA can make sure those almonds get irradiated or fumigated with chemicals first. But raw almonds, no. The FDA considers raw almonds dangerous, so they can be outlawed in the United States. And also, quote, training of foreign governments and food producers on United States requirements of food safety, unquote. This is designed to shove the FDA's dead food agenda down the throats of other nations. That means that the only foods that they're going to be approving are irradiated, chemically treated, hormone-laden, and genetically engineered. So this is the kiss of death to the organic food movement around the world. Right now, millions of people in Europe don't want genetically engineered food. They won't have a choice now because Germany is a supporter of this, and therefore our FDA and our food policy supporting genetic engineering will trump the desires and needs of those people in Germany who don't want genetically engineered food. And Codex Alimentarius is also promoted in the bill. So they couldn't get Codex into America for years. Now they have. So quite simply, the Food Safety Modernization Act will destroy virtually all local organic farming. It will destroy all small farms, local farms. It'll increase the price of locally grown food. And the FDA will specifically target farmers' markets. They will send their Gestapos out to raid the operations of local farmers, imprison them for not having the right paperwork for up to 10 years, and families will be destroyed. And those who have been successful at local food production will have to go out of business. Otherwise, they will have to comply. And it's financially impossible for any small farmer in America to comply with Big Agri's monopoly practices. So we warned the world. We told you what would happen. We fought it as best we could, articles and campaigns. But at the end, the average American didn't care. After all, if a person's eating junk food and drinking junk beer and alcohol, watching junk television, then why would you imagine they would suddenly be all concerned about a government overstepping its agenda, in effect, to create a fascist police state with food? They wouldn't. They're mindless in any case. Well, now you'll see the consequence. Pomegranate juice. It can block cancer cell migration. This is some good research, University of California, and it says that one of the deadly consequences of cancer is when the disease, of course, metastasizes, meaning it spreads from the primary site where it started to other parts of the body. But the good news is scientists have announced a major breakthrough in halting metastasis. They've discovered that components in pomegranate juice inhibit the movement of cancer cells and weaken the attraction of malignant cells to a chemical signal that's been shown to promote metastasis. The findings at University of California at Riverside were presented to the American Society for Cell Biology's annual meeting, and it's all good. So take your pomegranate juice unsweetened or eat pomegranates. That's good also. And also, vitamin D levels are found to be extremely low in women with breast cancer. Now, I first reported this a year ago, but now there's another study from the University of South Carolina at the 3rd Annual American Association for Cancer Research Conference on the Science of Cancer Health Disparities. And it showed that a high percentage of women, the majority of women who have breast cancer, have very little vitamin D. Now, of course, it's been our contention that vitamin D in adequate amounts protects the body against breast cancer, and the evidence shows that, and that when you're deficient, you're more susceptible to heart disease and cancer. So make sure you're getting between 1,000 to 3,000 units of vitamin D a day, along with calcium at about 1,000 milligrams. For those of you who are foregoing vaccines and you're having children, breastfeeding actually builds and boosts the immune system and creates natural immunity. This is from the Archives of Diseases in Children. Quote, babies who are exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months of life contract significantly fewer infections than babies fed from bottles and get less sick even when they get infected. That's according to this study. Quote, the research is very welcome and adds to the growing weight of evidence about the many benefits of breastfeeding. And that's from the United Kingdom's Royal College of Midwives. So, natural immunity comes from breast milk. Two good reasons to avoid what we've talked about many times is a sweet suicide. And that's high fructose corn syrup. The move is on to further muddy the waters pertaining to the high fructose corn syrup. The goal is to convince or confuse consumers into thinking that high fructose corn syrup is like sugar by changing its name to corn sugar. And while there are issues that surround processed sugar, high fructose corn sugar and corn sugar presents a wider problem. The primary concern is how high fructose corn syrup is metabolized by the body, and hidden and not so hidden genetic modifications it undergoes. High fructose corn syrup is comprised of 55% fructose. The fructose is unbound, meaning it's not attached to any other molecule. In nature, fructose would be bound most likely to glucose. Unbound fructose is immediately taken up by the liver for metabolizing when high fructose corn syrup is consumed. This initiates a metabolic nightmare. The liver is forced to work hard at metabolizing the instantly present fructose. Oftentimes, the liver has to ignore or inefficiently handle other metabolic duties, such as breaking down fatty acids. In addition, the liver may be unable to metabolize all the fructose. All this leads to a fatty liver, and that can kill you. So, no matter what they say about fructose being corn sugar, it's a different metabolic pathway. It is a different biochemistry. And finally, for women who suffer from menstrual cramps, all women suffer from some degree. And menstrual cramps are known as dysmenorrhea. And these cramps usually occur in the lower abdomen. Sometimes the pain can be felt in the thigh or lower back. Here are some natural remedies. First, it has been my experience when counseling people who've had very severe cramps, I tell them hydrate throughout the whole day. Why? Because if you have cramps and you really hydrate, and especially the cramps that are occurring in the lower abdomen, and it can be felt in the back, the increase in liquid prevents dehydration, and dehydration aggravates menstrual cramps, so you lessen the pain. Then ginger, taken every hour, is a wonder herb and has tremendous health benefits that even extend to easing menstrual cramps. And you can juice the ginger, or you can simply boil it as a tea and drink the water. Also, place a hot water bag on the stomach. It'll ease the pain. And then take about 1,000 milligrams of magnesium and 1,000 milligrams of oil of primrose, 100 milligrams of vitamin B6. Also, do not take any caffeinated products, whether it's in a carbonated beverage or coffee, because that causes local inflammation in your intestine, changes the blood to being acidic, and the acidic pH of the body will precipitate cramps. Then sip mint or peppermint flavored tea throughout the day. And also during menstruation, the pelvic area tends to get congested. Therefore, drinking some warm or hot liquids promotes blood flow to the pelvic area, and that is very good. Green tea is very good. So, those are some simple, easy things to do. Also, beetroot, cucumber, and parsley juice help eliminate that. I'm Gary Knoll. That's our health and nutrition. Now, quickly over to our environmental section. On yesterday's program, I spoke about how global weather patterns are becoming more severe, meaning we get more cold, ice, snow in the winter, and more rain and high temperatures in the summer. They're both caused by global warming. I gave an example of how Greenland is causing an enormous amount of melting, and how one lake, just one single lake that's about 4 miles across and 40 feet deep, emptied in under 4 hours. And where did it go? In this gigantic crevice that went clear to the bottom, 2 miles deep, and then that water ends up on the rock, and the rock and the ice of the glacier, it creates a skid, so it lubricates the glacier, and the glacier then slides faster, and so fast, it's calving, and calving is where the ice breaks at such a fast rate that there's no mathematical model to predict it. It used to be that we thought, and our mathematical models computed that the breaking and moving of some of these glaciers was inches per year, then a foot per year. Now it's over 2 to 3 miles per year, and it's increasing. So it's getting faster and faster that the ice is breaking and going into the water, which is increasing the overall water. Here's the latest from the BBC News. This is today, and I reported on this from a different point of view yesterday. Greenland ice sheet further grim. Quote, geologists are warning that the Greenland's ice sheet is, quote, retreating and thinning extensively after a year of record-breaking high temperatures. And they took a look at this and said that this grim news is showing that it could collapse within 50 years. And it had been predicted it would take 1,000 years. Now they're saying 50, which means it could be in 20. The group camped out 70 miles up the sheet and measured the thickness, speed, climate, and other vital statistics using radar, seismic, and geophysical equipment. They found rising temperatures had caused extensive melting in the upper parts of the ice sheet in this very sensitive polar region of the planet. This has generated at least double the quantity of meltwater compared to last year, which runs off the ice sheets into the Atlantic and Arctic Oceans. And there are fears the melting of the entire sheet could rise by 20 feet the oceans. That happens. Forget New York City. I mean, just forget the whole East Coast and West Coast. Now, so that's one study. So, again, we were ahead of that curve, and I reported that yesterday. Here's a separate article, and this is from Dan Weissern, and it Searchdale Patch. It says, how will rising sea levels affect local communities? And then it says this, not the upscale Sound Shore community. This Larchmont is a middle-class neighborhood in Norfolk, Virginia, that's surrounded by the Chesapeake Bay and the mouths of several rivers. Much of the air is under constant threat of water, as the surrounding waters have risen 14 inches and the highest relative increase in sea level anywhere on the East Coast. And, in fact, the New York Times called Larchmont, quote, the front line in the battle against rising waters, and detailed the tribulations of local residents and the multimillion-dollar projects that may not produce a solution. But how far off is this headache for Westchester's Larchmont and other communities along the Sound and the Hudson River? What does it mean for residents? The potential consequences could affect local utilities, regional consumers, waterfront businesses, and local property owners. Quote, it could happen next summer. Kristen Marcel, member of the State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program, referring specifically to a once-in-a-generation storm that, coupled with rising waters, could wreak havoc on waterfront developments, including homes, roads, trains, tracks, recreational areas. So, it's now, not in the future. So, when everyone was thinking it couldn't happen, not now, oh yeah, it's happening, and now. So, that's why we do our environmental updates. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Commentaries, and then guests. Please stay with us.
Make the world go away.
I'd like to welcome all of you to this program and all of you around the world listening. I'm Gary Knoll. The two greatest visions of a future dystopia were George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. The debate between those who watched our descent towards corporate totalitarianism was who was right. Would we be, as Orwell wrote, dominated by a repressive surveillance and security state that used crude and violent forms of control, or would we be, as Huxley envisioned, entranced by entertainment and spectacle, captivated by technology and seduced by prolificate consumption to embrace our own oppression. It turns out Orwell and Huxley were both right. Huxley saw the first stage of our enslavement. Orwell saw the second. We have been gradually disempowered by a corporate state that, as Huxley foresaw, seduced and manipulated us through sensual gratification, meaning cheap mass-produced goods, boundless credit, political theater and amusement. And while we were entertained, the regulations that once kept predatory corporate power in check were dismantled. The laws that once protected us were rewritten, and we were impoverished. Now that credit is drying up, good jobs for the working class are gone forever, and mass-produced goods are unaffordable, we find ourselves transported from Brave New World to 1984. The state, crippled by massive deficits, endless war, and corporate malfeasance, is sliding towards bankruptcy. It is time for Big Brother to take over from Huxley's Feelies, the orgy porgy, and the centrifugal humble puppy. We are moving from a society where we are we're skillfully manipulated by lies and illusions to one we are overtly controlled by. Orwell warned of a world where books were banned. Huxley warned of a world where no one wanted to read books. Orwell warned of a state of permanent war and fear. Huxley warned of a culture diverted by mindless pleasure. Orwell warned of a state where every conversation and thought was monitored and dissent was brutally punished. Huxley warned of a state where a population preoccupied by trivia and gossip no longer cared about truth or information. How about Facebook? Huxley warned of a state where a population preoccupied by trivia and gossip no longer cared about the truth of information. Orwell saw us frightened into submission. Huxley saw us seduced into submission. But Huxley, well, we were discovering, was merely the prelude to Orwell. Huxley understood the process by which we would be complicit in our own enslavement. Orwell understood the enslavement. Now that the corporate coup is over, we stand naked and defenseless. We're beginning to understand, as Karl Marx knew, that unfettered and unregulated capitalism is a brutal and revolutionary force that exploits human beings and the natural world until exhaustion or collapse. The party seeks power entirely for its own sake. That's what Orwell wrote in 1984. We are not interested in the good of others. We are interested solely in power. Not wealth or luxury or long life or happiness, only power. Pure power. What pure power means, you will understand presently. We are different from all the oligarchies of the past, in that we know that we are, what we're doing is wrong. All the others, even those who resemble ourselves, were cowards and hypocrites. The German Nazis and the Russian communists came very close to us in their methods, but they never had the courage to recognize their own motives. They pretended, perhaps even believed, that they had seized power unwillingly and were for a limited time those that would serve their power. We're not like that. We know that no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it. Power is not a means, it is an end. One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. The object of persecution is persecution. The object of torture is torture. The object of power is power. So wrote Orwell. The political philosopher Sheldon Wolin uses the term inverted totalitarianism in his book Democracy Incorporated to describe our political system. It is a term that would make sense to Huxley. In inverted totalitarianism, the sophisticated technologies of corporate control, intimidation, and mass manipulation, which far surpass those employed by previous totalitarian states, are effectively masked by the glitter, the noise, the abundance of a consumer society. Political participation and civil liberties are gradually surrendered. The corporation state, hiding behind the smokescreen of public relations industries, the entertainment industry, the tawdry materialism of a consumer society, devours us from the inside out. It owes no allegiance to us or the nation. It feasts upon our carcass. The corporate state does not find its expression in a demagogue or charismatic leader. It is defined by the invisible and the facelessness of the corporation. Corporations who hire attractive spokespersons like Barack Obama control the uses of science, technology, education, and mass communication. They control the messages in movies and television. And as in Brave New World, they use these tools of communication to bolster tyranny. Our systems of mass communication, as Wolin wrote, quote, block out, eliminate whatever might introduce qualification, ambiguity, or dialogue, anything that might weaken or complicate the corporate force of their creation to its total immersion. The result is a monochromatic system of information. Celebrity courtiers, masquerading as journalists, experts and specialists, identify our problems and patiently explain the perimeters. All those who argue outside the imposed paradigm are dismissed as irrelevant cranks, extremists, or members of a radical left. Prescient social critics from Ralph Nader to Noam Chomsky are banished. Acceptable opinions have a range from A to B, and both being the same. The culture under the tutelage of these corporate courtiers becomes, as Huxley noted, a world of cheerful conformity. I haven't, I'm sure, been the only person who's noticed that the so-called liberal, the Democrat on Fox News, Juan Williams, is, my God, what is he? He certainly doesn't represent anything I would consider liberal. And yet, that's what we're given. All messages we receive through these systems of communication, whether on the nightly news or talk shows like Oprah, promise a brighter, happier tomorrow. And this, as Wolin points out, is, quote, the same ideology that invites corporate executives to exaggerate profits and conceal losses, but always with a sunny face. We have been entranced by continuous technological advances that encourage elaborate fantasies of individual prowess, eternal youthfulness, beauty through surgery, actions measured in nanoseconds, a dream-laden culture of ever-expanding control and possibility, whose denizens are prone to fantasies because the vast majority have imagination but little scientific knowledge. Our manufacturing base has been dismantled. Speculators and swindlers have looted the U.S. Treasury and stolen billions from small shareholders who have set aside money for retirement or college. Civil liberties, including habeas corpus and protection from warrantless wiretapping, have been taken away. Basic services, including public education and health care, have been handed over to the corporations to exploit for profit. The few who raise voices of dissent, who refuse to engage in the corporate happy talk, are derided by the corporate establishments as freaks. Attitudes and temperament have been cleverly engineered by the corporate state, as with Huxley's pliant characters in Brave New World. The book's protagonist, Bernard Marx, turns in frustration to his girlfriend, Linnea. "Do you wish you were free, Linnea?" "I don't know what you mean. I am free. Free to have the most wonderful time. Everybody's happy nowadays." He laughed. "Yes, everybody's happy nowadays. We have been given the children that at five. But wouldn't you like to be free to be happy in some other way? In your own way, for example, not in everyone else's way." "I don't know what you mean." The facade is crumbling. And as more and more people realize that they have been used and robbed, we will move swiftly from Huxley's Brave New World to Orwell's 1984. The public at some point will have to face some very unpleasant truths. The good-paying jobs are not coming back. The largest deficits in human history mean that we are trapped in a debt peonage system that will be used by the corporate state to eradicate the last vestiges of social protection for citizens, including Social Security. The state has devolved from a capitalist democracy to a neo-feudalism. And when these truths become apparent, anger will replace the corporate-imposed cheerful conformity. The bleakness of our most industrial pockets, where some 40 million Americans live in a state of poverty and tens of millions in a category called near poverty, coupled with the lack of credit to save families from foreclosures, bank repossessions, and bankruptcy for medical bills, means that inverted totalitarianism will no longer work. We increasingly live in Orwell's Oceania, not Huxley's world state. Osama bin Laden plays the role assumed by Emmanuel Goldstein in 1984. Goldstein in the novel is the public face of terror. His evil machinations and clandestine acts of violence dominate the nightly news. Goldstein's image appears each and every day on Oceania's television screens as part of the nation's 2 minutes of hate daily ritual. And without the intervention of the state, Goldstein, like bin Laden, will kill you. All excuses are justified in the titanic fight against evil personified. The psychological torture Private Bradley Manning, who has now been imprisoned for 7 months without being convicted of any crime, mirrors the breaks of the dissident Winston Smith at the end of 1984. Manning is being held as a maximum custody detainee in the brig at Marine Corps Base Quantico in Virginia. He spends 23 of 24 hours alone. He is denied exercise. He cannot have a pillow or sheet on his bed. Army doctors have implied with antidepressants. The cruder forms of torture of the Gestapo have been replaced by refined Orwellian techniques, largely developed by government psychologists, to turn dissidents like Manning into vegetables. We break souls as well as bodies. It is more effective. Now we can all be taken to Orwell's dreaded Room 101 to become compliant and harmless. These special administrative measures are regularly imposed on our dissidents, including many others who have been imprisoned under similar conditions for years before going to trial. The technologies and techniques have psychologically maimed thousands of detainees in our black sites around the world. They are the staple form of control in our maximum security prisons, where the corporate state makes war on our most politically astute underclass, African Americans. It all presages the shift from Huxley to Orwell. The noose is tightening. The year of amusement is being replaced by the year of repression. Tens of millions of citizens have had their emails and phone records turned over to the government. We are the most monitored and spied on citizens in human history. Many of us have had our daily routine caught on dozens of security cameras. Our proclivities and habits are recorded on the internet. Our profiles are electronically generated. Our bodies are patted down at airports and filmed by scanners. And public service announcements, car inspection stickers, and public transportation posters constantly urge us to report suspicious activity. The enemy is everywhere. Those who do not comply with the dictates of the war on terror, a war which, as Orwell noted, is endless, are brutally silenced. The draconian security measures used to cripple protest at the G20 gatherings in Pittsburgh and Toronto were widely disproportionate to the level of street activity. But they sent a clear message. Do not try it, this. The FBI's targeting of anti-war and Palestinian activists, which in late September saw agents raid homes in Minnesota and Chicago, is a harbinger of what is to come for all who dare defy the state's official newspeak. The agents are thought police, seize phones, computers, documents, and other personal belongings. Subpoenas to appear before grand juries have since silenced many. The subpoenas cite federal law prohibiting, quote, providing material support or resources to designated foreign terrorist organizations. Terror, even for those who have nothing to do with terror, becomes the blunt instrument used by Big Brother to protect us from ourselves. Chris Hedges, I'm back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. My guest, Michael Rupert, is on hold. We're going to go to Michael in a second. Before then, let's say hello to Kara Lee, who's in studio. Hi, Kara.
Hey, Gary. I just had a quick email that I wanted to read you, a nice little thought. And it's just from this couple, Tom and Lena from Detroit. And they said, hello, Gary. My wife has truly saved my life by getting me to follow you 100%. I've dropped 50 pounds in 6 months and have a new energy for life. I'm 47 years old and a healthy 182 pounds now. We went to your store today and had some of your green juice, and he just wanted to thank you for changing his ways and getting a new holistic lifestyle.
Well, good. Thank you for that. And I have something to share with you. This is in the Boris Report. It says, quote, Reverend Pat Robinson sparked controversy in today's broadcast of a 700 Club program when he claimed that God created the blizzard currently battering the Northeast, quote, to punish Americans who are planning to drive to do something gay. Explaining his theory, Reverend Roberts says, quote, because of the bad road conditions the Almighty has made, any gay activities that people are planning on doing will have to be postponed by a day or two. Additionally, he argued God shut down major airports in New York City, quote, so that people who were hoping to fly to do something of a gay nature would have to make a train or a bus instead. So it might be days before the gay thing that they were going to do could occur. As for the millions of straight people in New York City who were also grounded by the bad weather, the televangelist said, quote, I think God probably wonders if these people are really straight, then what are they doing in New York City? In other blizzard-related news, the National Weather Service offered this update. It is as white as Glenn Beck's rally out there. Let's say hello to my guest, Michael Rupert. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. Well, you always have a way of just making me feel that everything is hopeless, and for me, that's pretty bad.
I don't think so, Michael. Michael, I'm sure you're going to take us to a different level of feeling that today. Michael, by the way, is a former LAPD narcotics investigator, a whistleblower, and he was forced out of the police department while holding his highest rankings and with no disciplinary action, and he's become an investigative reporter on the oil cartels and peak oil and post-oil society. And he also served as a questioner before the congressional briefing addressing the flaws in the King Commission report on 9/11. He's written many books, including Crossing the Rubicon and also on Confronting Collapse, the Crisis of Energy. So here's where I'd like to take us, and I'm going to keep quiet and let you just run with this here because I know you have a lot to say.
Sure.
Talk about... We're not paying attention to peak oil, and yet now oil is at $91 a barrel and rising, and China is a challenge. And I want you to tell us what you know about China and why their constant growth and their enormous amount of fuel they're using, along with Brazil and India, are going to be a major problem for our supplies of oil. So take us on that journey.
Okay. We are at a very unique moment in history now, and it's a very brief moment. We're all going to understand at a very visceral level very soon that there's a 96% correlation between greenhouse gas emission, that is the burning of oil and coal, but especially oil, and GDP growth. Now, we live, as is pretty well been established now, in an infinite growth paradigm. We live in the ultimate pyramid scheme of all pyramid schemes in a globalized economy. Growth cannot occur without burning more oil. Peak oil now has been admitted. That's the point in time in human oil production when you reach a peak that will never be surpassed, and after which you start on an inevitable downslope in the production of oil, because you've discovered well more than half of the fields that are out there and used half of the resource. So no matter what kind of money or technology you throw at the problem, you're not going to be able to produce more oil. However, it's clear from many, many economists. Of course, I do this every day on the World News Desk at Collapse. I analyze economic reports from all over the world on a daily basis. That oil demand in 2011, that starts in 2 days, will exceed in this year the all-time peak of global oil demand, which occurred in the summer of 2007. Now, the IEA now admits that peak occurred in 2006, and this is going to produce massive price spikes. A number of very, very credible reports from well-established sources are seeing $100 oil, which is not very hard to imagine now. We're at 91 and change today, exceeding $100 a barrel within the next 60 days and possibly $150 a barrel. The all-time peak was $147 by spring or summer. Now, what's clear is that the world will not be able to afford to pay those kinds of prices for oil. Now, in this equation, as it's playing out, Gary, The U.S. is a bystander. We are no longer an engine of global economic growth. Our economy is falling to pieces. It's clear nobody disagrees that it is China that is driving the world economy at the moment, and yet the Chinese economy is absolutely ready to just fall to pieces. Here's some examples of that. On the World News Desk at CollapseNet, we posted stories showing that China has something like 4,000 trains scouring Asia for coal because we have passed peak coal. And China cannot generate enough electricity to keep their factories that make all these doodads, gizmos, and cars running. Those same factories now have turned to diesel generators, and there's a massive shortage of diesel fuel. But I think the most ironic thing is that China is now selling, according to a report released by the Chinese government, 42,000 new cars a day. And yet their roads are so jammed that they've had traffic jams this summer and fall that took 2 months to clear. There's no place to drive the cars, yet their growth economy demands that they keep selling ever more and more cars, each of which have 7 gallons of oil in every tire. The Chinese property bubble is imploding, and China is now being wrecked by inflation. They've had massive price in food prices recently, and China has just over this last few days raised interest rates again, which has sent a shock through world markets. So this is the point from where in the documentary Collapse, which I'm sure most people have seen by now, where I said that that the human industrial paradigm, our civilization, will go over a cliff and collapse at the point at which there is another oil price spike and nobody can afford to buy that oil. And that's exactly where we are. There's no more bailouts left. Europe is falling apart. And what's so amazing for me, Gary, is that there are a great many economic writers. I'm just one of them. But if you take names like Chris Martinson, Nicole Foss, even Peter Schiff, Bob Prechter, a great many economists all are saying the same thing right now, which is that within the next 30 to 60 days, we face catastrophic economic events, which will be, and this is a quote from Nicole Foss, many times worse than the Great Depression. And we are just days and inches away from those events, and I've been tracking those very carefully, and they really can't be put off now. So this is on top now of the Republicans taking control of the House, and their agenda will be to shut governments down. There is a bill pending. States now cannot file bankruptcy. That's not constitutional, but there is a bill in the House being pushed by John Boehner and the Republicans and the Tea Parties, which will allow states to declare bankruptcy, even as state legislatures are now passing bills to allow cities to declare bankruptcy. The agenda for that is very clear. It's to shut government down, but it's also to break the unions. And that will have to happen one way or another, because there really is no such thing as an entitlement anymore, because there's no energy to guarantee that. But we have a 60 Minutes recent segment on our homepage at CollapseNet, and it's clear that California, Michigan, New Jersey, and Illinois are have their track shoes on, waiting to declare bankruptcy, which will allow them to break all union contracts and steal all the pension funds, and that's coming in very, very short order.
Okay, well, they can't steal what they don't have. In point of fact, New Jersey, New York, California, Indiana, Illinois have not been able to keep up with the payments to their pensions
right.
for a long period of time. Say they
right.
simply don't have the money. The state revenues are down because property taxes were based upon property continuing to go up in value. So on the one hand, communities can, and over 300 communities in the last 50 years have declared bankruptcy. And what happens is that their local bonds, the bondholders,
mm-hmm.
take the haircut on that. At the level where the state has this, they may be trying to renegotiate contracts with unions and then stop all the entitlements to unions. That is obviously one of their goals. But at no point do they look at the real problems. I do not see
No.
any of the people in government saying, why can't we take away $1 trillion of the $1,450 billion that the military-industrial complex and the security states get? That they could take a train there. Why can't we take away at least half of the money that's given to the pharmaceutical cartels and the insurance cartels in the healthcare sector. That is a trillion. Why can't we take away the subsidies to big pharma, or to the big farm industry, and to the energy cartels? It was $245 billion last year between those two. So if you simply took away taxpayer-funded subsidies to the major corporate state, then in the privatizing industries, you're saving $2.5 trillion a year. That would then be able to keep the people who are living off their pensions being able to do so. It would keep those necessary social systems in place and actually could increase them. But instead of doing the right thing, both Democrats and Republicans, with few exceptions, have then gone to the corporate margin and said, let us take away from those who do not have anything to begin with what little they have left, but let us not at any point touch the profits that are massive and growing. And that's why you have over $1.5 trillion by corporate America sitting there in its profits, largest in history, in all of history, in just the last year, not being used until they see how they can make even more profit. So it's just a really, it's a Faustian bargain. And if people in the states don't see the nonsense, then they will be complicit in it. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly what's happening. But of course, you and I both know that what we could do and what will happen are two utterly different things. The will has never existed to do that, nor will it exist now. And there is no comfort in the could, in that we only have days or weeks before this next. And I think it's really inconceivable to most people how severe it's going to be. But again, so many economic writers, including myself, see it all very clearly, and we see the same thing. So that's not going to change. I mean, we now have in the House, I think it's the chair of the House Banking Committee, Max Baucus of Georgia, who recently made a public statement saying that Congress should exist to serve the banks. That's what we're here for. That was a bold, unequivocal statement. So it is clear that our government is owned by the banks and the corporations, who are now literally chasing a $1.6 quadrillion derivatives bubble down the drain. And that's why they're holding on to this cash, because the credit bubble is about to implode worldwide, which is not just a credit for you and me, but it's credit for corporations that need a 30, 60, 90-day float that's built in to finance the flow of goods and services. That's all going to disappear. That's why cash is being hoarded at the moment. And that cash will be gone in a heartbeat, because everything is predicated on the need for growth, and growth is over. It's, you know, China is gone this year, and certainly when the Chinese economy goes, there is nothing to sustain the entire global economy.
Well, explain succinctly why you believe China is gone.
Well, first we have the what I just discussed about their insane infinite growth paradigm that's choking even their own system now. You have roughly, I think it's 1.3 or 1.6 million brand new housing units in China that nobody can afford to buy because they can't get financed. And now China, to fight inflation, has had to raise rates, which means that all those resources are wasted at the same time that people are living in cellars and renting out, you know, 10 square feet to live in, which is absolutely absurd, let's say 20 square feet to live in. Pollution is so bad in China that in Shanghai now you cannot even see across a major intersection. The air pollution is so thick. And at the same time, civil unrest is rising throughout China. We've had worker demonstrations because the Chinese are now caught in the same trap. As their workers produce more and more, and China has become the world's largest energy user and the economic machine, the workers want something, but they're not getting anything. And there have been suicides, actually, with Chinese workers at major plants in China that we've documented on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. But clearly China needs coal and resources and oil more than anything else, and all of those are in short supply, and those price spikes are going to hit China the same way they hit everybody else.
Also, we have to look at South Korea, Japan, Brazil, and other countries in the
India.
They all are booming economies, and booming means resources. We have a finite amount, so I think that we will start to see price of oil go up above $100 in the next 2 years. I believe it will hit closer to $200 a barrel. And then people will think, gee whiz, that's $8 a gallon for gas, and then we'll start to see the real pain starting in America. Michael, we're out of time. The book is called Confronting Collapse, The Crisis of Energy and Money in a Post-Peak Oil World, Chelsea Green.
Yes.
And the website is collapsenet.com. Thank you, as always, and people can tune in to Michael Rupert's radio program on Sunday evenings, following mine, on the Progressive Radio Network. It's really worth listening to. Thank you very much, Michael.
My pleasure, Gary. Take care and Happy New Year.
Okay, it's called the Lifeboat Hour. It starts at 9 p.m. on Sunday. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a good day, everyone.
Is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.